I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Every winter, it happens in a few lonely corners of Canadian cities.
A community coming together tonight to mourn the loss of a woman in her 30s named Crystal, who died early on Tuesday morning after becoming trapped in a clothing donation bin.
At least 7 clothing donation bins in West Vancouver have been sealed up after a 34-year-old man died when he got stuck in this bin on Sunday. At least 7 Canadians...
Somebody desperate for warmth or warm clothes or both climbs into a clothing donation bin and dies trapped. These deaths usually attract attention for about a day because of their unusual nature, and then the issue goes away until the next time it happens. There are a lot of big societal issues that contribute to these deaths. These are the kind of things everyone from ordinary people to the heads of state need to work to end. Income inequality, mental health care, a housing crisis driving people onto the streets, and shelter systems that aren't equipped to handle the rising numbers of people who need them. But then there is the problem at the heart of the deaths themselves. And that's one that you would think we should be able to solve. Can we build a better donation bin? One that doesn't trap people who climb inside it? Or if it does, one that lets them breathe comfortably until someone can arrive and get them out? We might not be able to solve the existential problems that contribute to these deaths. But surely we can solve the design problem on the front lines of them. Or at least some first-year university students can. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Kyle Edwards is a reporter at Maclean's, a frequent and much-beloved guest of The Big Story. Kyle, start off with, how do people die in donation bins? How often does it happen?
Well, I think the problem has really come up in the last few years during winters, the winter season when it's cold, and generally in a lot of major Canadian cities, homeless shelters, they end up running out of beds, and a lot of cities have continually been forced to grapple with this homeless crisis. And unfortunately, donation bins, you can find them in various corners of cities, and people try to get inside them and find shelter from the cold. Unfortunately, these bins are not meant for people to get inside them. So what happens is people will die. I'm not sure what the cause of death might be, but people just aren't able to get out of them. And over the past several years, about at least eight people have died inside donation bins or died trying to get in them.
Yeah, it just seems like an insanely high number for a very specific cause of death.
Yeah, it's alarming. And I think it really speaks to, again, the larger issue of cities continuing to grapple with a homeless crisis that appears to be growing.
Who is trying to fix it?
Well, so in Toronto, I believe it was in early January, a young woman, she was 35 years old. She her name was Crystal Papineau, and she had died inside a donation bin in Toronto. She died about a block away from a woman's shelter that was turning people away because they were at their capacity. It was cold, and she was looking for a place to find shelter.
And she'd walked away, and this was the nearest place she found.
She walked away, and this particular donation bin was behind an apartment building, a large one.
Yeah.
And, you know, you only are able to find that if you know exactly where it is, and she knew where it was. And immediately, the manufacturer, a Hamilton-based manufacturer, had sealed off and removed its bins from the streets. And they had promised that they would go through, they would try to revamp the donation bin and come up with a different model that is generally safer and more effective. But there are other people trying to make a difference, namely students from UBC Okanagan.
Yeah.
And there's a class of students, a class of first-year engineering students that were tasked with coming up with an idea to revamp and redesign donation bins.
Tell me about this professor, because he sounds like a fascinating dude.
Yeah, he's really interesting. His name is Ray Tahiri, and he seems to really be keen on encouraging his students to tackle real-world, potentially life-saving projects. A few years ago, he had students design personal belongings carts for the homeless, and they actually look like really interesting. So as you know, as most people know, a lot of homeless people generally push around carts with their belongings in them.
Right.
And those can be fairly dangerous for a number of reasons. And so students helped build a design that was more effective and safer for homeless people in the community. And those are currently being tested on the streets of Kelowna, BC. And I'm not sure how it's going right now, but for Professor Tahiri, that's like his big goal when he runs his first year engineering class is to encourage his students to get out there and do things that engineers would do out in the field when they enter the workforce. And so this year he noticed that, like many Canadians, he came across stories of homeless people both in Toronto and in Vancouver dying inside donation bins. And he came up with an idea. We're going to have our students basically get into groups and design donation bins that will potentially save lives.
So what kinds of things did they come up with?
Very interesting designs. I spoke to 18-year-old Matthew Holitsky, and he had an incredibly interesting design. It was like a turnstile. So it was a turnstile that could actually resist depending on weight. So if somebody was trying to get in there, the rotation of the device would not move.
Right.
And at the same time, the front part of the donation bin would be see-through, so you could see what's actually in there.
That sounds like the simplest thing that nobody has thought of. Why aren't the front of these bins see-through?
I'm not sure. Well, generally, I would say it's probably because a lot of people try to steal from them. But
fair enough.
But in this case, I think in terms of practicality, this would probably save lives.
Yeah.
And so the students, they got together in groups of five or six, and they came up with these designs. They created like miniature models using a 3D printer, and then they displayed them at like a contest at the end of the year, at the end of the term, at the school term this past fall. And one of the other students was Manuela Tozzi, and she is from Sao Paulo, Brazil, and she's an international student at UBC Okanagan, and her group came up with a really cool design that I thought was really interesting. It basically contained an inner cylinder that was shaped like a Pac-Man, so that the bin itself, when it's opened, the mouth of the Pac-Man will kind of open towards you,
yeah,
and then turn away as you close the hatch. Because one of the problems that students were finding was that anyone can open the hatch of a donation bin on the streets. They could peek in, look inside, and see the bottom. And that would allow people to basically just either steal donations or spend the night there if they needed to.
You could see the appeal of spending the night there if you were on the streets. I mean, it's totally sheltered. It's full of usually warm things.
Exactly. And for the students, that was a really big problem, because it basically just allowed people to wiggles away in there. I mean, these things are not very big, and they're not meant for people to get into, much less spend the night. And so for a lot of the students, making sure that people couldn't get in was a challenge, was a bit one of their goals when redesigning the bins, but also ensuring that there was a way out. And from what I understand, a lot of students design mechanisms that would allow people to find a way out if by chance they got in.
So I'm mentioning this because it's kind of come up tangentially a couple of times, and I don't mean to be flip, but why is it stealing from a donation bin? Like, I would presume the people, when I put clothes in that donation bin, I presume that people who need them should take them. That's why I'm donating them.
Well, I think the labeling behind that is because these donation bins bring in millions of dollars to the homeless community.
Really?
The organizations that purchase them from manufacturers and then put them by, whether it be shelters or other donation centers in Canadian cities, they generate a lot of revenue for the homeless community. And one of the things that Professor Tahiri told me during our conversation was that it's actually quite ironic that we have these donation bins that are so crucial to the homeless community, is that they are one of the threats to them, and they're essentially, people are risking their lives trying to get into them.
It is like one of the most fascinating things about this story and why it kind of sticks with us whenever it comes up, that it's like it calls attention to the problem from both ends, right? The idea of we need to create ways for people who have winter clothes and who want to help to donate things, but at the same time, those are the things that are killing people.
The response from municipalities in BC's Lower Mainland has been to either seal the donation bins or simply remove them from the streets. And a lot of them have, a lot of city councils have actually voted to do that. And that is not necessarily a good solution in Tahiri's mind, because it would cause an array of different problems for shelters and centers that are basically using these bins as a way to help people who need them. And so essentially the best way to approach this problem is by redesigning them.
I'm always fascinated when municipalities make choices when they're faced with a homeless crisis that will make it worse instead of figuring out a way to use that money to build more beds. When I read your piece about designing bins, I thought of, we're in Toronto, so I'll talk about the TTC, but the TTC stops used to be totally enclosed in glass, right? And people would sleep in them in the middle of a snowstorm. Instead of putting money towards more shelters, they made those TTC stops a foot off the ground so that the snow gets in, so that people don't want to sleep there. When they put those studs down on park benches in the middle of them so that you can't lie down on them comfortably, You're spending money on, it's the same engineering problems that Tahiri's class is facing, right? Only they're doing it in a way that moves away from solving the problem rather than towards it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it definitely feels like, redesigning them is definitely important, but it feels like a Band-Aid to the actual larger issue. And this is one of the things that Tahiri stressed to his students, is that, you know, keep in mind that just because we are doing an essential service here, we have a larger problem when it comes to donation bins. If people are willing to risk their lives trying to get in them, the point of the design competition at the end of the term was to, first of all, determine a winner, and then to hand that idea off to fourth year students who can then turn the idea into something larger, potentially a real life prototype that could benefit communities and then be sold to manufacturers in the industry.
Without trying to put like a moral of the story on this, what did the kids you talked to practically get from this exercise?
I think they got a real life sense of what their chosen profession could actually yield when they go out into the real world and provide services to everyday Canadians. A lot of the students I spoke to, and these are young kids, they're 18 years
old.
They're
first years, why are first year university students the ones tackling this problem?
Yeah, they're 17, 18 years old, and they approach the project with really no idea, with very little knowledge of the problem. Both Manuela and Matthew had no idea this was a problem. They had no idea. They kind of had some idea of the issues of homelessness in BC. It's a growing issue, especially in Vancouver. But they were really going in blind. And at the same time, they really didn't have an idea of what engineering would entail. They thought it was more about maybe building bridges and engines and designing larger...
Big theoretical stuff.
Big theoretical things. It really gave them a sense of this is what it means to be an engineer. And these are the types of projects you can eventually tackle. And I think they really came away from it feeling like the next 4 years at UBC Okanagan will be valuable to them.
Yeah.
And that they've made the right choice in their
chosen path. They might save a life.
And that they might save lives, exactly.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you so much.
Kyle Edwards, reporter at Maclean's.
5-time guest, I want to say, but I didn't do the math. That was The Big Story. For more from us, thebigstorypodcast.ca is your go-to destination. It's not your only one, though. You can also find us at frequencypodcastnetwork.com and on social media at TheBigStoryFPN and on social media yet again at FrequencyPods on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. More than all that, though, we want to be in your podcatcher of choice, wherever you choose to get it. And we want you to leave us a rating, leave us a review, because we need those. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
My name is John Cullen, and I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and curling. It's the story of Broomgate, how a single broom, yes, a broom, turned friends into foes and almost killed the 500-year-old sport of curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.